Hello, and welcome to the 15th episode of Tooncast, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I am your host, TFG1 Mike. And today I am not joined by Kevin, our usual co-host. He's got some personal stuff going on, so he won't be on for a few while. But we do have a special co-host, which is Mike the Birdman Dodd. Hello.
Hey, guys. What's going down?
Not much. We are going to be discussing the awesome 97 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles this in this episode. So what's been going on with you, Mike? I know we talked the day on Headshot, but...
Since then, I've pretty much just been bombing around. Went to the States this past weekend on another one of my famous video game runs and built myself a new media hub in my room. I scored myself a big-ass TV, bought a PS3 in there, and then after I'm done this show, I'm going to play Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2 for review for $11.50. So that's pretty much all the cool stuff with me, a lot of video game stuff. Oh, actually, I'm going to a Microsoft press conference in Toronto on Tuesday, which so that you can see my coverage there on ScrewAttack.com on probably Wednesday.
Yes, very, very cool. Yeah, there hasn't been a lot going on with me. Tooncast has actually been on a hiatus for about 2 weeks, only because Kevin's had stuff going on, I've had stuff going on, and we just haven't. I think our last episode was Jim and the Holograms.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's 80s. It was a popular cartoon back then, and I do remember watching it. Actually, just as a programming note, there will be 3 episodes of Tooncast this week, 15, 16, and 17.
Yeah.
Yes, Turtles, DuckTales, and Tailspin, which trying to hunt down the Snowball to see if he'll be on the Tailspin one. So I think that's about it, and we're going to head on into the show.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles,
heroes in a half shell,
turtle power,
they're the world's most fearsome fighting team,
we're really hip,
Ninja Turtles,
they're heroes in the half shell,
and they're green,
hey, get a grip,
when the evil Shredder attacks, these turtle boys don't cut them no slack,
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Splinter taught them to be ninja teams.
He's a radical rat.
Leonardo leads, Donatello does machines.
He's a jack.
Raphael is cool, but rude.
Give me a break.
Michelangelo is a party dude.
It is now time for the history lesson. For episode 15, we travel back to 1987 with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Teenage Ninja Turtles, known as Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles in the United Kingdom, is an animated television series produced by Murakami, Wolf, Swenson, and I can't pronounce that studio name, whatever. I can't pronounce that.
It's Shogun Kukan or something? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a ninja version of the
Studios.
Exactly. It premiered December 14th, 1987, first as a 5-part miniseries animated by Toei. The series featured Teenage Ninja Turtles characters created in the comic book form by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. But the property was changed considerably from the darker tone comic in order to make it more suitable for the family. The initial motivation behind Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles animated series was that upon being approached to create a toy line, Playmates Toys was uneasy with the comic book characters' small cult following. They requested that a television deal be acquired first, and after initial 5-episode series debut, the California Toy Company released their first series of Ninja Turtle action figures in the summer of 1988. The two media would correspond in marketing, style, and popularity for many years to come. David Wise and Patty Howeth wrote the screenplay for the first 5-part miniseries with input from Eastman and Laird. When the series continued in the second season, comic artist Jack Mendelsohn joined the show as the executive story editor. The show was a Saturday morning syndication from October 1, 1988 to September 23, 1989. After it became an instant hit, the show was expanded to 5 days a week and aired weekday afternoons in syndication in most markets, from September 25th, 1989 to September 17th, 1993. On September 8, 1990, the series began its secondary run on CBS's Saturday morning lineup, beginning as a 60-minute block from 1990 to 1994, and then a 30-minute block until the series ended on November 2, 1996. The show helped launch the characters into mainstream popularity and became one of the most popular animated series in television history. Breakfast cereals, plush toys, and all manner of products featuring the characters appeared on the market during the late 1980s and early 1990s. A successful Archie Comics comic book based on the animated show instead of the original black and white comics was published throughout the late 1980s and early 1990s. Action figures were top sellers around the world. In 1990, the cartoon series was being shown daily on more than 125 television stations, and the comic book sold 125,000 copies a month. Holy crap. Well, that's a history lesson.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember when Archie used to publish these, and in fact, I think recently they released a trade paperback of some of the earlier issues. I remember having a really big collection of them. It had Cuddly the Cowlick, Wingnut, and Screwloose, and I remember finding the individual issues. They weren't very common, actually. They were just super hard to find, but when you found them, they were a pretty good read. I think they were like something like, I don't know, 30, 40 pages, which wasn't too bad. You got like two or three complete stories in them.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. The next segment up here is the general memories. For me, this show, this was right after kind of Transformers was dying down and Thundercats was already dead and Voltron had since kind of moved on and He-Man, I think, was gone as well. This was the show that picked up Saturday morning for me in 1987.
This was a show where I actually learned how to hack my first satellite. And what I mean by that is way back in the day when satellite used to be on transponder channels, when it just wasn't already programmed for you, I remember searching around the satellite feeds really late at night because I was a really curious kid. And I remember finding the CBS Direct morning feed, or it was the syndication block, and I could find it being broadcast at really odd hours of the night. So I fell into Ninja Turtles because it was a bit of a tech challenge for me just to get into it. But my parents bought me all the toys for this show. I remember getting up Saturday mornings to really get into this. This was a show I loved to death and used to tape all the time back when VCRs were cool.
Yes.
And just recording them and just playing with my turtle action figures. Like, this show was one of the hallmarks of animation for the late 80s going into the 90s. And this show was like just amazing for what it accomplished in terms of how long it ran, first off, and then even changing the animation style halfway through.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I had all four turtles. I had everything. The only thing I really didn't have is I didn't really have any of the vehicles, and I don't even know if there were I'm sure we'll get to it when we get to the legacy segment, because that's when we usually talk about the toy lines and stuff. But I don't even sure if there was like super playsets back then. There,
oh yeah. Oh yeah, trust me, buddy. I had like everything way back when.
I so wanted the turtle van, but I never got it.
I used to crash it into things. I think I still have my like turtle van somewhere. Actually, Twig will be doing our own TMNT show for our season 4 premiere, and hopefully Playmates will be sending me one of the new turtle party wagon thingamajigs.
Ah, cool. Yeah, this show is just super awesome. It's just great stories. I actually, the first five episodes of the first season, that five-part miniseries, is actually on iTunes. You can buy it, and when I still had my iPhone, I was watching it, and oh my god. There's a part where Raphael says, where they're fighting the foot soldiers, and of course the turtles don't know that they're foot soldiers, and he hits it, and it says clang, and he goes, clang? Did you say clang? I just laughed at that so hard. I almost pissed myself laughing because of that. This show is just great for kids of its time. Anyhow, I think kids can get into it. I mean, it's still a good kids cartoon.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as violent as a lot of people make it out to. I mean, like, you never saw Leonardo hurt people with a sword. I thought there were a lot of good life lessons in it. In fact, just before the show started, I was watching something about the invasion of the punk frogs and just how they're like, you know, we could talk and work this out. We could reason with them. And Shredder's like, no, goddammit, you're going to attack them. And I don't know, I just remember the Turtles show being one of those great things where even you, if where you could get together with your friends because you were about that age, you could sit there and just watch it, and just you would all get into the moment. And another really cool thing, speaking of the, kind of legacy about having the action figures, Playmates actually released the 25th anniversary Turtles earlier this year.
Yep.
So if you don't have them, go get them because they're supremely awesome.
I was gonna get them. I had all four, and I think Target, the Target up the street from me had Splinter as well. But I said, no, I really can't spend, because they're like $9 a piece, which isn't bad, but I just really couldn't bring myself to get them. But I will get them eventually.
The only one I didn't get is I don't have Shredder, but I've got the four Turtles: April, Bebop, Rocksteady, and Splinter. I got those sent to me by Playmates, and I remember they're still as awesome as ever. My only complaint about the new 25th anniversary ones is the same complaint I had back in 1988. The weapons, when you're trying to pry them out of that little plastic cage thing, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yep.
Yeah, good luck. Michelangelo's nunchucks are still as shitty today as they were way back when.
Yes, very much so. So we're going to move on to the characters and voice actors segment. These are the core characters of the show, appeared in nearly every episode for the first 8 seasons. After season 8, only the Turtles, April, and Splinter were retained as main characters, although Shredder and Krang returned for several episodes in season 10. First up, you have Leonardo, who is voiced by Cam Clark. And I'm only going to mention the U.S. voice actors because I just can't see other voice actors as these characters, much like anything else that people that listen to our show know.
See, it's weird. I don't remember there being a different voice cast for Canada, but then again, when I watched it, I watched this on CBS, and it wasn't a, like, simulcast, so...
Right, right.
It's weird. I have no idea there were other voice actors for Leonardo. I can't picture anybody else but Cam Clark doing Leonardo. This doesn't make any sense to me.
Yep. Leonardo was the one that had the blue bandana. He also had the katana swords. He is the leader of the team and is closest to Splinter. Leonardo, I don't know. I like him, but he's not my favorite.
Dude, he's the shit. He has two swords.
I'm not saying he isn't. I'm just saying, I don't know. I never really connected with him that much. I mean, outside of the fact that he has two swords, you know, I mean, that is cool. I'm not saying that's not, but I just never really connected with him. Then you have Donatello, who was voiced by Barry Gordon, who actually Barry Gordon also voiced Junior Wentworth in The Snorks. The Purple Mass Turtle wields a bow staff, often used to disarm adversaries. He is the scientist of the team and is constantly tinkering with various inventions. Now, I don't do a lot of tinkering, but Donatello over the years has kind of become a tech kind of guy, or kind of turtle, I guess you could say, and I always kind of associated with him the most, and actually he is the character that I do like the most out of the four of them.
See, Donatello is actually the guy that got me into figuring stuff out when I was a kid. I used to watch him play with all the crazy inventions in the show, and I got the idea, hey, maybe I can do the same thing. And more than one thing was taken apart to be put back together, and it never quite worked the same way again.
Raphael, voiced by Rob Paulsen, the Red Masked Turtle wields two scythes, which make him a match for any swordsman. He is the joker of the team and often comes out with sarcastic remarks. I've never read the comics, whether it be the original comics or the Archie comics. Before the movies, Raphael in the cartoon didn't seem like the angry one like he does in the films.
Yeah, he's more very much laid back, like very, yeah, that sucks, but whatever. You know, he was just kind of there. I mean, and they really significantly toned his character down from the original comics because... I remember reading one of the Turtle comics called Body Count,
mm-hmm.
and yet no, just Raph more serious. You people, no.
Michelangelo, who was voiced by Townsend Coleman. God, the Tick voiced Michelangelo. Holy crap.
That's amazing.
Wow.
And Waldo, and where's Waldo?
And Sentinel Prime from Transformers Animated. The Orange Masked Turtle wields the whirling nunchucks and later a grappling hook and often whirling pizzas. He is the most relaxed member of the team and is the source for many of the catchphrases of the series, such as Cowabunga. I've always liked Donnie and Mikey the best out of the four of them. I always thought they were the funniest. They were the ones that always got me laughing or always, you know, made me really smile when I watched the show. Raphael and Leonardo, I don't know. I never got into them that much.
Raph, I always thought was really cool. I don't know. Raph is probably my favorite turtle because he wears red, and that's sort of my thing.
Yeah.
But Donatello, I liked, but he didn't get enough screen time. Leonardo always got downplayed. I always thought the show was more focused on Mike and Raph than it was anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have Splinter, voiced by Peter Renaday, a strict and wizened sensei, this mutant rat who trained the turtles in the art of ninjutsu. Now, when I was watching this on my iPhone, the very first episode when they tell the origin story, I had seen the movies previously about a few months ago. And the story in the movies is the origin for Splinter is completely different. Obviously, the movie had to bring it up to live-action standards, but in the series, Splinter is actually Hamato Yoshi. They're not a separate person. He gets turned into a rat. Whereas in the movies, Hamato Yoshi was the master and he had a pet rat, which, I don't know, makes no sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, Splinter was cool. He had a few good moments in throughout the first five episodes. Excuse me. April O'Neil, who is voiced by Renee Jacobs, a red-headed TV reporter, discovers the turtles' home in the sewers and befriends them. When I was watching, April's outfit can almost be a stripper outfit.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I was actually going to send you something kind of funny here when I get a chance. There was actually a girl I met at FanX who dressed up as April O'Neil, and, well, holy shit.
What?
She was, it was very good. I'm just trying to find pictures right now, so keep going, Mike.
And then you had Shredder, who is voiced by James Avery, who is, like you said off air, Uncle Phil, which I did not know that at the time.
That's so fucked up. Uncle Phil's, get the turtles! Get out of here, Will! What the hell?
Turtle soup tonight. Yeah. The arch-villain of the Turtles is usually the main villain in other media, but in this TV series, Shredder always is against his will, has to take orders from Krang. Krang, who is voiced by Pat Fraley, an extremely intelligent, disembodied brain from Dimension X, who commands the Technodrome. He finds and helps plan most of Shredder's schemes. All right, now Shredder I liked. Shredder was cool. Krang, when I watched, again, I really only watched the first five episodes because that's all I could afford on iTunes, but when I saw Krang, first of all, the voice is creepy as hell. Second of all, the way he is animated as a... Oh, God, it's all squishy. Ugh, it's yuck. Ugh.
Yeah, there were some pretty vivid moments with Krang. I mean, there are ones when he's walking around outside of his cyborg body and you hear the little squish of his tentacles on the ground. Yeah, that's kind of gross.
Yeah. And then you have Bebop and Rocksteady, voiced by Barry Gordon and Cam Clark, respectively. Shredder's clumsy, oafish henchman who often provided the show's comic relief, a mutant warthog and rhinoceros, respectively. Bebop and Rocksteady in the show were really funny. I thought they were really cool. I liked when they always went up against the turtles, and obviously Rocksteady, because he's a rhinoceros, he would always charge them. And they'd just jump out of the way, and he'd end up in a wall or something.
There's one thing out of the first season, and I think it was in the first five episodes for some odd reason, and I always remember where one of the turtles hits, I think it's Rocksteady over the head with a light post, and his eyes turn yellow and red like the sign.
Yeah, yeah.
For some reason, that's one piece of animation I've never quite forgotten.
Yeah, I do remember that. And just going over some of the... some of the alternates for the voices, which I did not know, because it's been so long since I've actually seen this, and of course that's the whole point of Tooncast, is looking back on shows that we remember as kids. Shredder's alternates, Dorian Harewood, which I know he's done plenty of other animation. Jim Cummings, Darkwing Duck, was an alternate for Shredder.
What?
Yeah, that's what it says on the thing. Because I got the voice cast list from Wiki, where it showed all that stuff. And then just some of the other characters: Baxter Stockman, Rat King, Leatherhead, Casey Jones, Irma, Vernon Fenwick, General Trag. Overall, I think it was an awesome voice cast. I don't think there isn't any one voice actor that played a role that I could not stand. Outside of the fact that I did not know Townsend Coleman played Michelangelo, the only reason why I don't like Townsend Coleman is because of Sentinel Prime and Transformers Animated. That's it. Everybody knows that. But, I mean, overall, there isn't a single person in here that I don't think did an excellent job with this show as far as the voice talent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just super, super stuff. So we're going to be moving on, unless you have any final thoughts about...
I was just looking at some of the other stuff, like some of the other kind of voice actors. Just looking at seeing what Irma has done in the years. And it looks like a lot of sweet and fuck all. nothing super memorable.
Yeah.
Although, if you can believe it, she was born in 1946, so Irma's old, man. Just saying.
So up next we have the behind the scenes segment. This is where we talk about not really the actual production, but just who is producing the show and the writers and stuff. Outside of Fred Wolf, I don't recognize anybody on the on the produced by credits.
Let me take a look here.
Fred Wolf does. I believe he did some Diagnosis Murder. I don't really remember.
Looking at Andrew Luckey, seeing what he's done. Well, he did Dragonflies. And RoboCop versus the Terminator, he was a consulting producer. That's kind of cool. He also did James Bond Jr.
I used to have those books.
Oh, my God. He also did the California Raisins.
Oh, my God.
And he wrote Toonstruck and Growing Up Creepy.
Oh, okay. As far as the writers, the ones that stick out to me, obviously David Wise, who did plenty of G.I. Joe, Transformers, He-Man stuff. Fred Wolf, as I said. Also, Michael Reeves, who had done some Transformers, and I believe he wrote on Voltron as well. And then, again, for the series' other crew, for dialogue director, you had Susan Blue, who was also attached to
RC, yeah.
Transformers and G.I. Joe, and then David Wise, who is the executive script consultant. I'm not really getting into the distribution or the studios, because everybody probably knows. I mean, it was on USA Network for a while. Family Home Entertainment were the ones that released the VHS tapes. So I think we're going to move on to the actual show. The storyline for this, it was a very intricate story, I thought. It starts off with basically, it differs greatly from the original Mirage Studios comics, presumably to make it more appropriate for family and audience, which is what we said before. In this version, Splinter was formerly a human being, an honorable ninja master named Hamato Yoshi. Yoshi was banished from the Foot Clan in Japan after being deceived by the satidious Orokusaki, who pinned Hamato Yoshi's doji to the wall with a knife, preventing him from kneeling before their sensei, which was seen as an insult. When Yoshi removed the knife, the sensei was again insulted, believing Yoshi was drawing the blade in opposition to him. Exiled from the ninja clan, Hamato Yoshi moved to New York City, where he was forced to live in the sewers. I'm not really going to read the entire storyline for this, because it is extremely long. I mean, everybody really knows what the story is. Let's just get down into the censorship part, because I knew nothing about this. The logo in the censored UK opening sequence, which is also used in a few other countries, which said the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles. I'm sorry, you stiff-ass Brits. Give me a break. I understand, you know, ninja's probably not, you know, culturally sound or whatever, but...
Who the fuck cares? Ninja sounds cool. Hero sounds stupid.
I know. I was like, Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles? I mean, you'll hear me every time every time I try to say it when it comes to censorship. I always say, Hero Turtles. In the UK, TMNT was released under the name Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles. This was due to the controversy surrounding ninjas and related weapons such as nunchucks at the time. The intro sequence was heavily edited because of this, replacing the word ninja with hero or fighting, used digitally faded logo instead of the animated blob, and removing any scenes in which Michelangelo wields his nunchucks, replacing them with random clips from the show. Okay, you dumb bastards, what the hell is wrong with you people?
Yeah, that's kind of retarded.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when they changed his weapons to that stupid grappling hook thing, and I remember thinking, what the fuck are you doing? I mean, sure, he used it in some pretty cool ways, but nothing was as awesome as his nunchucks. But then again, when I was a kid, when I saw this, I'm not going to lie, a lot of us made our own nunchucks. Actually, because of Ninja Turtles, some of us took up martial arts, and we'd actually fight with these weapons, and it probably led to us not dying, but still, it was fun. I mean, do you remember some of the role play for this? I mean, because once the series moves past a certain point, there were no Michelangelo role-playing toys. I never once saw his grappling hook as a toy. I'm not saying it didn't exist, but I never saw it.
Right. I mean, when I first got into... I didn't really get into role-playing. When I first heard about, like, role-playing card games and crap like that was when Pokemon came around, is when I first... I knew nothing about...
Wait a second. You're telling me you never got the Ninja Turtle role-play stuff and played with your friends, like, wearing the toys or anything?
Nope.
Like... Wow, you lonely bastard.
Shut up.
But having the little plastic toys was neat, and Ninja Turtles, I guess I could see why they want to difference from Ninja. I mean, obviously, people having nunchucks and swords running around, their neighborhoods wouldn't be a great thing to have, but still. I mean, this is a controversy you're going to revisit when you go to like, Power Rangers, and it was 10 times worse than friggin' Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, Power Rangers will not be covered on Tooncast because technically it's not a cartoon. We may cover
it Saturday morning,
but we may cover it on some other show, but technically it's not animation.
But if you go to thisweekingeek.net, we have done a Power Rangers episode.
Yeah.
Shameless plug.
Insert shameless plug there.
All right, roll, baby.
When shown on the BBC, phrases like "let's kick some shell" and "bummer" were removed from the episodes. The series Ninja Turtles: The Next Mutation also referred to the Hero Turtles, possibly using the term hero or separate the television series from the live-action movies. The 2003 television series, however, remained intact when shown in the UK and Ireland. Okay, I'm sorry. The 2003 fucking series remained intact when shown in the UK and Ireland, but the 1987 series got cut to shit. That's bullshit.
Yeah, I always figured that was really stupid. I mean, like, way back when, like, we were kids, I mean, and it was back in the mid-80s and probably the early 80s, late 70s, when all these children activist groups started getting involved because they felt like a lot of cartoons were nothing but propaganda for toys and everything, and for the large part, they weren't wrong. But it's always, oh, save our children. You know what? None of the kids that are growing up now like us, like I'm almost 30, right? Like I'm 28 in like a month. And people from my generation aren't Looney Tunes, in my opinion. Yet you look at the kids that grew up, you know, a little bit later with all the censorship. I think that may have screwed them up even more.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. I'm going to move on to some trivia here, because the censorship stuff is just pissing me off. Some trivia here. The show, the original comics, all four turtles had red bandanas, but for the TV show, they were each given a different color to make it easier to tell them apart. Now, I think it's better to have the multicolor, to have the red, blue, purple, orange, just, you know, because it is easier to tell them apart. Because without the bandanas, it's like, who's who? And even though... The first or second episode, April is always, Christ, she's always mixing them up, calling them the wrong name.
Oh, yeah, there were just so many dumb little things that happened, but it was kind of funny, though.
Yeah, kind of. At the time of its final episode, it was the longest-running cartoon in American TV history. However, this record was beaten 2 years later by The Simpsons, which, as we all know, nothing can beat The Simpsons nowadays.
That show needs to end, but that's a topic for a different day.
Yeah, that's That will most definitely be covered on Tooncast at one point.
I have a rant for Headshot for that, so don't worry.
Okay. As humans, Bebop was African American and Rocksteady was blonde. I remember that because I was like, wait, what?
I thought Bebop actually looked a little bit cooler as a human, whereas Rocksteady looked just kind of retarded, but that's okay.
He basically looked like a street punk version of the Kingpin.
He was a derp a derp. He was just so big and goofy, right? Like derpy derpy diddly derp. There was nothing defining about him. Yet with Bebop, he had the purple hair, he had the sunglasses, he was black, he looked cool.
Yeah, very much so. There's a whole bunch of goofs and stuff. There's continuity goofs. There's audiovisual goofs. I'm not really going to go through them all just because there isn't that many of them, but there's just so many of them. So,
Actually, I will tell you about one that I just saw not a half hour ago.
Okay.
If you look in the episode Invasion of the Punk Frogs, yeah. Splinter's talking to the group, and Michelangelo and Raphael are eating pizzas. And there's audio clearly coming out of Mike's mouth. But he's got his face stuffed full of pizza. There's no, like, hey, talk with your mouth full thing. And at one point, it's like they switch bodies for, like, a second. And it's dumb little goofs like that plague the series. I mean, they're talking here about audio-visual unsyncing.
Yep.
That happened more often than they probably want to admit. I mean, it's almost as bad as the G1 Transformers cartoon, where people would randomly have different things assigned or different headbands would randomly appear. I remember once Raphael had Leonardo's voice, and they would just screw up just dumb little things. And I'm thinking, for a cartoon that's shown on a major network, you'd think they'd go back and do a little bit of quality control. And, I mean, it can't be that hard to go back and fix something like that.
Yeah, no, it really can't. But nowadays, with remastering, I mean, hell, look what Shout Factory did with Transformers, with the G1, with the new Matrix big box set and all that stuff. It's supposed to be remastered. I think it's supposed to be color corrected as well. So hopefully, maybe I don't know. We'll get to whoever owns the rights when we get down to the legacy segment, and we'll figure it out then. Up next is the music segment. The theme song for this was so memorable.
It is one of the few songs I want to learn to play on guitar because it kicks so much ass.
It's just like, it's one of those things where, like, if you hear it in the background, or if you're like at somebody's house and their kids are watching TV, and you just hear even like the single, you know, just one single note of it, your head will just whip around like, oh, really cool, Turtles, and you'll probably go sit and watch TV with the kids.
Yeah, like, it's just, it has one of those very iconic theme songs, and that's something that I think is so important to note about a lot of mid-80s to late 80s animation going into the 90s. The theme songs actually had a lot of production value behind it, because usually the theme is where all the money went to, so, like, the intro sequences would look really cool, and what kid can't listen to that theme song that's from our generation, Mike, that can't tell you when they're listening to the theme song, they know exactly what's going on screen?
Oh, yeah. Nobody from the generation couldn't do that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, you picture Michelangelo on the dance floor, and they're saying, Michelangelo is the party, dude, and you see him dancing around, or you hear Raph is saying, he's rude but cool, give me a break. You see him smashing the thing into the camera. You know exactly what's going on. And there are very few cartoon series that can evoke that memory, I think. I mean, the only other one I can think of is maybe Power Rangers or maybe the original X-Men cartoon.
Yes, yes. The series' original music was done by Dennis C. Brown and Chuck Lorre, who Chuck Lorre was actually the producer, and I believe producer and creator of Dharma and Greg and The Big Bang Theory.
Holy shit.
Just overall great, great, great theme. So we're going to move into the legacy segment. The toys, again, were just awesome. Here is the status of the television series. There are currently no TV reruns of the original Turtles animated series in North America, although its last episode to be broadcast on CBS aired November 2nd, 1996. Reruns continue to air until August 16, 1997. The show has not aired anywhere else since. Reruns had also aired in the USA Network's USA Cartoon Express. I was right. I need to look that up later. From September 13, 1993 to September 15, 1996. Lionsgate Home Entertainment and Fred Wolf Films own the rights to the show, and they have been responsible for the DVD releases. Mirage Studios does not own the rights of the 1987 television series, so Lionsgate and Fred Wolf are under no obligation to inform them of future releases. Many episodes were released on many VHS tapes from 88 to 96 by Family Home Entertainment. Some reruns were shown for UK audiences on CBBC weekday mornings. In the Republic of Ireland, the series ended its original run on August 8, 1998. But the show is still regularly rerun on RTE2. I had all four of these. Burger King had released four single episode VHSs with their kids' meals in the late 80s. The episodes were Sky Turtles, Invasion of the Turtle Snatchers, Great Boldini, and April Foolish. I had all four of those VHSs. I love those.
Well, I don't think we had this promotion in Canada, but I seem to vaguely remember some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toys in Canada. I can't remember them fully. I think there was something going on with Pizza Hut at some point with the Ninja Turtles, but I can't remember what.
Yeah. And it's been referenced in multiple things. Stuff like Saturday Night Live, Saved by the Bell, Mystery Science Theater 3000, Golden Girls, Cheers. Let's see, Tiny Toon Adventures, Animaniacs.
King of the Hill,
yeah, wow. Futurama, Teenage Mutant, Leela's Hurdles. Oh, my God, that's horrible. It's just horrible.
Wow.
The Incredibles. The vehicle that the Mole Men appear at the end of the film is the same as the transport modules in Ninja Turtles. Night of the Living Dead, Family Guy, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, South Park. It was featured in I Love the 80s in 2002, the 100 Greatest Cartoons in 2005. It was spoofed in a whole bunch of stuff. The Real Ghostbusters, Mean Green Teen Machine, Muppet Babies, Tiny Toon Adventures, Late Night with Conan O'Brien, Paper Mario? Wow.
That's obscure.
That's a little weird. I did not know that. The Fairly Odd Parents, Robot Chicken, and Man Versus. This is just to let you know, Mike, this has been a recurring theme since Tooncast has been in existence. We always get the reception, and we always find these IGN rankings for their for the top 100 cartoons. In January 2009, IGN named TMNT as the 55th best show in the top 100 best animated TV shows.
Fuck that. That should be in the top 15, the top 10.
I know, exactly. Well, that's the whole point. Kevin and I, my regular co-host Kevin and I, we have since probably, I believe, episode 8, which was the mask episode, we have pretty much denounced the IGN thing, even though we still read it off just to basically bitch about it, because it's ridiculous. I'm sorry. I don't know who the hell works at IGN that are just, you know, ranking these shows. Hell, Mask was ranked 99th. Did it win or is it nominated? Young Artist Awards. It was nominated for two Young Artist Awards, and the DVD releases, there were volume sets, and then when it came to season four in the U.S., they went to season sets. Seasons four through ten, actually, seasons four through eight have been released. Season eight just came out September 1st this year. Season nine and season ten are to be announced. Not really going to go into the Region 2 stuff, because...
Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? exactly. For the magazine, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles magazine is a children's magazine published quarterly by Welsh Publishing Group. During the height of the TMNT popularity, the late 80s and early 90s, it was officially licensed by Eastman and Laird and available by subscription. You know, I guess we can go into the closing, which is basically we give our final thoughts, and then I just go into the whole closing thing.
See,
go ahead.
I mean, like, in talking for closing thoughts about the Ninja Turtles 87 series, I mean, one of the things I've always wanted to talk about, and we're going to talk about this more on Twig in a couple of weeks here, is I think that the Ninja Turtles franchise is probably the most successful in terms of marketing. And what I mean by that is, do you remember the marketing blitz for this show way back in, say, 89?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was everywhere. I remember having the Hostess mutagen fruit pies filled with the vanilla mutagen goop or whatever. It was just, it was green vanilla, but it was the coolest thing. I remember pizza flavored hot dogs. I remember like Ninja Turtle High C. I think I'm not 100% sure on that one.
You're right.
But I just remember this being so cool, and I remember making friends over this. I mean, I remember like just playing with the Rat King's sewer pontoon bikey thing, and just, you know, playing with that with my friends. I remember playing with my best friend Quincy, and we used to have all these Ninja Turtle things. I remember my neighbor across the road had the Technodrome, and I remember having the sewer playset. And the sewer playset could connect to the Technodrome. And I remember the mutagen ooze. I mean, what other toy had goop outside of Ghostbusters? The Ninja Turtles. And I'd love to find a can sealed of this stuff. I mean, this series did so much for kids. And yes, later on, it got kind of retarded. I mean, I remember the Ninja Turtles dressed up as vampires, werewolves, and football players.
Yeah, yeah.
And those were just kind of stupid. But the coolest thing that they ever did, and they tried to address this, was they had this thing called the Real Celluloid Heroes. And they're Ninja Turtles done up in the style of the movies. Mm-hmm. And they're actually made out of latex. And I will admit they smelled weird, but they were really cool. And I've never seen that ever attempted since, where you see if the TV show is different from the movie, right, they take one animation style and they run with it, and they make toys based on that.
Right, right.
And I remember that just being tremendously cool. Plus, you had just, I mean, Turtles was everywhere. I mean, you had coloring books, you had audiobooks, CDs. Actually, when you buy the 25th anniversary Turtles right now, you get episodes of the cartoon show on DVD.
Yeah, you're talking about the 25th anniversary movie versions, right? The 25th anniversary movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you get them, and that's really fantastically cool that Playmates would include those. Plus, you get the TMNT game from Ubisoft on a DVD as well if you buy certain other figures. I mean, we're talking about this in a couple weeks, but they sent us these figures called the Alien Hunters, and they're done up in the style of the 2007 movie. Mm-hmm. But they're still reminiscent of the 1987 Turtle toys because they were turtles that are basically the basic turtles, but they're superposable, but they have really cool items and stuff like that. And I don't know, Turtles, I think, is the greatest marketing franchise in the last 20 years. I mean, can you think of anything outside of Pokemon that has accomplished what it did?
Transformers,
okay, but there wasn't Transformers food. Ninja Turtles covered everything.
All right, I'll give you that, but, you know, who wants to eat a robot? Wait, don't answer that. I don't want to know.
Yeah, but you know, it's weird, though, just the fact that Turtles became such a cultural phenomenon, referenced everywhere. Transformers, yes, it did have its references everywhere with a bunch of big-name movies, but Turtles did it first, and Turtles did it best. Yeah. I mean, look at the older movies way back when. I mean, He-Man had a shitty movie with Dolph Lundgren and fucking Tom Paris in it. And you had the Ninja Turtle movies, which didn't have any big-name cast members outside of Corey Feldman as the voice of Donatello. But it was still something that was respected because the first Turtles movie was very dark, right? And the cartoon show, you know, it sat alongside the movies, and you could still view them together and still get the fact that they happen in the same universe. I mean, do you remember in, I think it was probably about 94 when the animation style changed?
Yeah, yeah.
To try to make it darker because the Turtles lost all their expressiveness and their bright colors.
Yeah.
And that sucks. However, though, that being said, any video game that was based on the 1987 Turtles has been friggin' amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Turtles in Time, one of the best Super Nintendo games of all time.
I have it in right now in the other room. That's the game I've been playing for the last probably 5 months.
Because it kicks ass, and the version that came out this year by Ubisoft, TMNT Reshell Turtles in Time, sure, it was cool, but it wasn't the Turtles we know and love from 1987. It was the new Turtles with the new voice cast, and that's another thing, too. The voice cast from this series was so memorable.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you think of the Turtles, you think of the 1987 voice cast, you don't think of the 2003 cast or the 2007 cast for the movie. Now, with that being said, have you heard about TMNT Forever?
I've heard of Smash Up, but not...
Okay, TMNT Forever, it's a Turtles movie that happens across all universes. So the 2003 series, the 1987 series, the next... Like, basically, all the Turtle universes that have ever existed come together in one show, in one movie.
That sounds pretty cool.
And that's supposed to be coming out... I think it's supposed to come out later this month, or it's already out, actually. So check on Wikipedia. I know it's supposed to be showing on Cartoon Network. Bits of it were shown at the Toronto Fan Expo and the San Diego Comic-Con this year. Plus, there's supposed to be a new movie coming out for the Turtles, I think, next year. And I guess that's another thing, too, is the video games. Like I did mention, anything based on the 87 has been good. You had... Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time. You also had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, the arcade game, which was, like, number two. But you also had... You also had the Manhattan Project, the Hyperstone Heist, which was basically a retooled Turtles in Time.
Yeah.
There's just... this was an amazing franchise for what it accomplished.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm really happy that it's making a big comeback. Lionsgate Entertainment's been putting out the DVDs. In fact, one thing that my girlfriend Blair did for me, she bought me a Ninja Turtles messenger bag, and on one side it's Leonardo, and on the other side it's Michelangelo, and it is the coolest retro piece of hardware that I have.
Cool. I have, when the show was, right before the movies came out, my dad had gotten me a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles beach towel. Imagine the blue logo with the TMNT title from the 87 show and all four turtles on it. And his note was like, don't get any pizza on it, dude. I was like a kid in a candy store back then when I got that. One Halloween, I was Donatello when I was a kid. It's just an amazing, amazing show. Here's hoping that Lionsgate decides to take all of the seasons, put them together in a complete series. I would love to have that.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, just there's so many cool things this franchise could do.
Yes.
And I'm so glad that they have. I mean, one of the most memorable toys, that this just makes me think of it. Do you remember the pizza thrower?
Yep.
That was fucking cool. I remember my parents threw me a Ninja Turtle-themed birthday one year. And my mom, my grandmother, took me to go see the Ninja Turtles movie in theaters in Owen Sound back when it was Cinemas 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we had Domino pizzas afterwards. I couldn't have been happier. Ninja Turtles, my parents always bought me everything for Christmas. I bonded with some of my best friends over Ninja Turtles. I'd say it wouldn't be a far stretch to say that Ninja Turtles is probably in my top three animated series of all time for how it shaped my life. And these guys did a fantastic job with it. I mean, the comic books are cool, and you had your choice. You could go funny, or you could go serious. I mean, I know in one of the comics, Donatello gets his arm ripped off. Ooh. Yeah, I know. It's pretty fucked up. But just it's good to see people younger appreciating the Turtles for what they are. I mean, and the 2003 series, I've only seen a few bits and pieces, but it definitely has the vibe of the 1987 with it being its own distinct creature. So I'm glad to see that we can still get together and talk about mutant ninjas.
It was okay. I don't think, in my own personal opinion, I don't think any Turtles series is going to come anywhere close to this one, to the original cartoon series. What pissed me off about the 2003 series was when it eventually, as the season progressed, they changed it to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Flash Forward or Fast Forward, and they're like time traveling. Basically, a cartoon about Turtles in Time, which I guess is okay, or dimension jumping or whatever the hell they were doing. I don't know. I really didn't get into it that much. I really didn't like the animation style for the 2003 version. What the hell was I going to say? Oh, you know how Transformers has that Transformers always has had like repaints?
Yeah.
Well, Turtles had multiple versions of the characters, and my favorite, outside of the original four Turtle action figures, my favorite were the ones with the push-down pop-up heads.
They're, that's an odd choice.
So cool. Well, those and the shell backpack. There was Turtle
action. Those were fucking cool. I remember those.
Yeah, those were awesome. But you know, the push down heads, it was just like in the movie when Mikey puts his head down to make sure it doesn't get chopped off. You know, it was that kind of thing. Do you have any Twig stuff you would like to promote before I go into our closing here?
Yeah, sure. Well, season 4 is going to be coming out beginning in October. Oddly enough, with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles being our first topic, then we're going to be going into George A. Romero's zombie universe, and lastly, finishing it off with one of the greatest authors of American Horror, H.P. Lovecraft, in Chaosium's Call of Cthulhu. So it should be a good time coming up. Stay tuned to thisweekingeek.net for more interviews. I'm going to be talking to somebody from Dead Space Extraction from Electronic Arts in the next little while. So be sure to be checking that out. Check me out on screwattack.com and thegameheroes.com, where I'm always doing something weird and wacky.
Yes, exactly. Especially with Mickey.
That's what I do. My little buddy. I love Mickey. He's my buddy.
Thank you for joining us here on TuneCast. There are several ways you can get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. The first is you can visit www.geekcastradio.com and find all the other GCR and podcasts there. The second is you can stop by our forums, predaconempire.com/CafeSpark, and get all your GCR and Transformers discussion topics there. The third is you can leave the show feedback on iTunes. Please do this. That is the best way to help the podcast out. The fourth is you can visit the www.earth-2.net forums and find our threads for the shows in the self-promotion section. And the fifth is the email address, which is gcrntunecast@gmail.com. We now have a voicemail line. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each episode. Be sure to say which show you're leaving the message for. The number is 502-526-5821. You can also follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCRNTuneCast. Mine is TFG1Mike, and what is your Twitter, sir?
My Twitter is @Birdman.org or @ThisWeekInGeek.
Good deal. We hope you enjoyed this episode of TuneCast and wish you'll join us next time when we will be reminiscing on DuckTales. For now, I am TFG1Mike with...
Mike the Birdman Dodd, saying live free or die hard.
And in the immortal words of Optimus Prime, transform and roll out. And thank you for listening. Until next time, insert fart here. Ew.
Good job, Mike. And we finished well ahead of schedule.
Nasty.
Thank you all for being here today. I've called this press conference on behalf of myself, Ron Algar-Watt, and my co-creator, Matt Robotham, to inform you that once the current run of our award-winning webcomic Vengeance of the Interman is finished at the end of this year, we are hereby retiring from comics. No more webcomics for us. So that's why we brought you here, and we will now take your questions.
Al? There's no one here.
There's nobody here?
There's nobody here. Nobody read the comic.
Oh.
At all.
Oh.
Ever.
Well, we're doing a podcast now.
Yeah, we are doing a podcast now.
The Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Available via iTunes or on the web at algar.com.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of TuneCast coming this week.